this one. Okay. Well, like Terry mentioned, is that we've been going through our Bible reading plan. And the last 4 weeks, we've talked about we've done a lesson from each of the columns of the reading plan that we're studying in class. This morning, we'll go to the last column. I hope that you've been able to spend some time doing this reading, and I hope that you've been able to do the reading from the Psalms that has been the study at home. I know Rachel and I have been trying to set aside an evening to talk about and study that, and some weeks it's worked, and other weeks said, oh, yeah, that, we need to do better next week. You probably know how that goes. But I hope you are taking the opportunity to do that study at home column. I know that the Psalms aren't always for everybody. I put some of my story there in my corner of the bulletin there about how I've not always appreciated the poetry, but boy, it's growing on me. And this week, as I was spending time in Psalm 19, I've been getting more and more excited about getting a chance to talk about this psalm this morning. We're talking this morning about creation proclaiming its creator, about the joyful proclamation of all the things that God has made, singing the praises of that God. And this week I got a good example of joyful proclamation. I know we talk in those terms. I got a good example this week I needed to share with you. All right. Down in my office downstairs, one of the boards, I took everything off of it and I wrote at the top, the world would be more awesome if, ... I left a marker up there. But, you know, anybody that wants to go down there and write something that will make the world more awesome, you have the opportunity to do that. I took my boys in there. I said, put some answers up on there. And so they put theirs. And I put one on there, to, you know, kind of being goofy. So the world would be more awesome if bacon were health food. And we had a good chuckle about that. And, that was, I think, Wednesday night. Thursday or Friday morning, Jared, who usually is the first one up, and he comes in and says, can I go turn on the TV? And we all get up, you know, 20 or so minutes later when the alarm goes off. And I don't know if it was just a commercial that came up or if he came across some sort of infomercial or what, but he came running into the bedroom to tell me that they did it. Bacon is healthy now. He saw a commercial about some sort of rig that you stand it up and the fat drips down and now bacon is healthy. Now, later we had a talk about the difference between healthier and healthy. But he was so happy to deliver this good news. You know, we talk about gospel, or we talk about good news, or proclaiming the joyfully about the good news of God. That was it. That was, Jared was saying, here is something that you need to hear because this is good news for you. I tried to let him down easy. But when we talk about joyfully proclaiming our Creator, try to keep that in your mind. In Psalm 19, it starts off with creation testifying. creation proclaiming. It says, the heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of His hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth. Their words to the ends of the world. I love this idea that something within all things that are created proclaims and testifies about its creator. It says, if you are willing to see and willing to listen, everything about creation has a story to tell about our God. It says they don't have speech and they have no words, but you can hear the voice everywhere. The first verses there are probably drawing back to Genesis 1 and creation, where it talks about the heavens and the skies. The word there, the skies, is sometimes translated as firmament. It's the same thing as in the beginning, it talks about putting in a firmament to separate the waters. And it says day after day, night after night. This is probably drawing on that idea of the things that God created are still there and are still pointing back to the one who creates. Because what else can they do? What else can any of us do, if we are being truthful, but proclaim the glory of God? It is within our nature. It is within the nature of all created things. The title this morning is silly, I admit that. Water is wet. It's obvious. Kathy didn't check with me on a picture. I figured she could handle finding some water. That was good. I was half expecting a picture of someone saying, duh. But that's kind of what this psalm is saying, though. When you talk about the nature of creation, it's as obvious as saying water is wet that you say creation proclaims the work of its creator. Now, I want you to think of how can you describe water without bringing in the idea of wet. I'll give you a moment. I need a drink anyway. Water is, as essential as wet is to water, that is how our Creator and proclaiming His glory is to all creation. There's just no getting around it. And that's where this psalm starts. All of creation, even without voice, speaks. And it moves on more specifically, talking about the sun. In the heavens, God has pitched a tent for the sun. It is like a bridegroom coming out of its chamber, like a champion rejoicing to run his course. It rises at one end of the heavens and makes its circuit to the other, and nothing is deprived of its warmth. So this is again talking about how God has set up creation. And so we have the heavens and the skies, and now we have the sun, the let there be light of it. The sun which moves and impacts the whole world every day. It says as it moves from one side to the other, every part of the earth gets touched by its light, and God has created that path. We see statements like this about the sun and nature in some of the poetry of the surrounding nations of Israel. You know, they share some influences. But the difference that is being made here is normally these statements are made praising the sun or praising creation. And that's not what the Psalms do. And that's not what we do when we look at creation. While creation is being personified in these words, it is not being deified. Right? When we talk about the greatness of creation, we do not say that the great things of creation are gods. We say they belong to God. We say that look what a wonderful thing God has done in making all of this work together. And so this first half of the psalm is this hymn about God's creation testifying. And then it seems to kind of shift gears. In fact, some people say this looks like two separate poems put together. I don't know. You can make that case. But I'd say even if it was somehow composed separately, I think it works together. I think that the rest of it is doing very much the same thing. Because we move on from creation and we start to talk about law, which I know everybody is excited about. Everybody loves talking about legal stuff. Well, this psalmist certainly does. And I think we can learn something of it. And on the face of it, these six statements in verses 7 through 9 seem redundant. Each one uses a different word for law. You have laws, statutes, precepts, commands, fear, decrees. But these are not trying to be redundant. These are bringing in every aspect of what the teachings of God bring in. They refresh the soul. Trustworthy. Make wise the simple. Give joy to the heart. Light to the eyes. Endure forever. All of them are righteous. Firm, pure, radiant, right, perfect. What this is saying, if you remember the way that it talks about creation and the sun, this says, in the same way that the sun's light and heat touches every part of the earth, it says that God's law, knowledge, teaching, any of these names you want to put on it, are so all-encompassing that for God's people, it touches every aspect of our lives. There is not a corner of your life that is not impacted by our God, in the same way that there is not a spot that the sun does not reach. And if verses 1 through 6 recite the creation story from Genesis 1 through 1 and 2, then verses 7 through 9 tell us about a knowledge that far surpasses that of the forbidden fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We went back at the beginning from creation, and it is good, to the scene with the tree of knowledge. And now, the way this is setting it up, we have creation proclaiming how good it is, and now we have a knowledge that is true. We have a knowledge that we should seek. We have something greater than what was in the garden. And this is our God. And I don't think this is talking about the laws of Moses. I don't think this is talking about the laws of sacrifice and ritual purity. I think this is talking about the revelation of our God that comes through his teachings. These statements did not expire when we come to the New Testament age. And it says, those who have these teachings, those who have this knowledge, are greatly blessed. Because these laws, they are more precious than gold, than much pure gold. They are sweeter than honey from the honeycomb. By them your servant is warned. In keeping them, there is great reward. That there is blessing that comes from the teachings of God. And I think that could be a good end for the psalm. I think this balance between nature and God's teaching, the all-encompassing nature of the Son, all-encompassing nature of God's knowledge and revelation, I think that would be a good place to stop. But there's a little bit more. Because the writer here goes from looking at the world around and then looking to the heavens and God's revelation to looking in the mirror. And it's startling. I think we all know that feeling of knowing all that there's out there, of being encouraged about God's word and the gospel, and then we look at ourselves and go, I wish I measured up. Here are the words of the psalmist. But who can discern their own errors? Forgive my hidden faults. Keep your servant also from willful sins. May they not rule over me. Then I will be blameless, innocent of great transgression. May these words of my mouth and this meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight, Lord, my rock and my redeemer. When we make that turn to the mirror, it is startling sometimes. Sometimes we say, if the rocks and the trees can testify, why can't I do better when I do have words? You ever feel that way? You ever wish that you had the proclamations, wish you had the words, wish you could get it right, wish that when you looked at the teachings and commandments and laws and all those different words that were in 7 through 9, when you looked at all those things, when you looked back in the mirror, you wished you measured up a little bit better. I think we all feel that when we're at our most honest. But this turn to look inwardly is not meant to be a discouragement. This says that if we can see God in creation, if we can see God in his words, we ought to be encouraged to see God in our lives. Because we may not be perfect. Scratch that. We are not perfect. I could go further, but we'll leave it at we are not. But we are God's. We belong to God. We have access to the perfect one. We have the ability and the opportunity to seek after God's ways, God's knowledge. We were talking in class about what does it mean when perfect or maturity or completion comes. We're working that way. We have the example in sight, even if we are all very aware that we're not there. But if God can use the rocks and the trees and the snow's not falling anymore, so that's good, but can use the rising snow and the birds of the air, beasts of the fields, all those familiar phrases, right? If God can use those things, who without speech declare the glory of God, how much more can we be? And so the words end here with a plea to God. use me. Let me be in your image. Let me share in that testimony of your creation, because we are part of that creation. I'm really starting to like the Psalms. You know, I think the more times that you find yourself without words, the more you can appreciate the help of somebody who had some words. I think that's a very valuable aspect of the Psalms. And so one thing I did this week, we'll see how this goes. I decided to rewrite Psalm 19 based on the ways that I understand what it's saying. And I think it remains faithful to the wording. And so as we close, I'm going to share the Pratt Revised Standard Version of Psalm 19. Creation cannot stay quiet about the Creator. You can't get away from it. There's no escaping it. His praise is heard in every language and from every creature. In Dutch and in Deutsch, praise his name. From the catfish and the caterpillar, give him the glory. Even the sun finds its pleasure in doing God's will. Each morning it rises and each night it sets, just as God determined. Along the way, every ray shines hallelujah on the whole earth. The Lord who created is the Lord who still reigns. His laws are perfect, his commandments life-giving. The fool finds enlightenment, and the dim paths are illuminated where his law reigns. The one who finds the word of the Lord holds a great treasure indeed. The heart that answers its call will be restored and invigorated. I am far from perfect, but I draw near to his perfection. O God, who sees the heart and not just the results, smile upon me as I seek to live my life as a verse in the mighty chorus of your creation that sings your praises day after day and night after night. It's a great thing to be a part of God's creation, to be a part of God's plan, and to be a part of God's people. If this morning you need to stand up and say, I want to be part of God's people, I need baptism, I need prayers, I need the support, I need to feel a part of this story, this testimony, this proclamation, please share. Please come forward as we stand and sing.
Have thine affections been nailed to the cross?